Welcome to Me Time, the podcast for women in midlife who've been taking care of everyone else and now say, it's my turn to take care of me. I'm Kim Aceto, health and self-care coach for women in midlife and your host. Thank you for spending your precious me time with me right now. Enjoy the show. Okay, so today I am joined with Becky Galli, but her full name is Rebecca Faye Smith Galli, and I'll call her Becky for this interview. Becky is a former IBM sales rep who turned to writing after a bout with the flu in 1997 that left her paralyzed from transverse myelitis, a rare inflammation of the spinal cord that affects one in a million. Surviving this and other losses, including her 17-year-old brother's death, her son's degenerative disease and subsequent death, her daughter's autism, her divorce, and only 9 days later, her paralysis, fostered an unexpected writing career. In the year 2000, the Baltimore Sun published her first column about playing soccer with her son from the wheelchair. She then began her From Where I Sit column for over 12 years, publishing her first book, Rethinking Possible, a memoir of resilience in 2017. Her current column, Thoughtful Thursdays, shares what's inspired her to stay positive. Becky, thank you so much for joining me on the Me Time Midlife podcast.
Oh, you're welcome, Kim. It's a pleasure to be here.
All right. So let me start with the question that I ask every guest at the beginning, which is, what do you enjoy doing during your me time?
Well, I have extremes. So okay. On one end, I love being alone on my deck, which overlooks a very beautiful landscaped area with the sun coming in and doing some reflective reading and writing. I just love that early morning. If I'm really on my game, I'm up before the sun comes up and I get to watch the sunrise. And so that's just very peaceful and restorative for me. Mm. And then on the other side, I really enjoy being around a lot of people and meeting new people and getting to know them. So in the wheelchair, that's not as easy as it used to be. I used to be in sales and marketing and knew how to work a room and those kind of things. So I've had to adapt to saying, yoo-hoo, here I am, or, you know, there's somebody I'd like to meet. Can you introduce me? But it connecting with other people really restores me as well. Mm. So I try to balance the two.
Right. Yeah, there's something about getting up before the sunrise that's just, yeah, it's so nice, the quiet right before everything starts to happen.
And it's predictable, you know. It's like,
that's right.
Of all the uncontrollable things, you know that sun is going to come up. And I think that's can be very grounding when you're starting your day, that, yep, well, don't have control over a lot of things, but this is one thing I can pretty much count on every day. Sometimes, you know, it's cloudy and you can't see it as clearly as others, but the day begins.
Yes, that's absolutely right. And so you talk about how you like some solitude, but you also like to be around people. So would you consider yourself an introvert or an extrovert or somewhere in the middle, or what do you think?
I think introvert. I think that's where I go if I'm depleted. Mm-hmm. You know, that's where I know that I need to rest. I know that I need to gather my thoughts and it takes a lot of energy, at least for me, to be social and make sure that you're saying what you want to people, because it's kind of limited for me. And so it's like, I really like to be on my game when I do have that social time. So afterwards, I think it can be energizing as well, just because you're thinking in different pockets. As you meet new people, you discover their interest and you find similarities, and that's cool for the future. So, but in general, an introvert.
Right, right. And what about like your, I guess it, both the introversion and extroversion and maybe your personality, has any of that changed? Are you the same woman, would you say, before everything happened? Wow. I don't know if you could say you're the same woman, right? How can you be the same woman after so much has happened? But I guess as far as your personality and your, you know, being social or wanting to be in solitude.
Things have had to change. I mean, there's a lot of life-changing moments have happened to me where it's a big pivot in a direction that I knew nothing about, whether it be epilepsy for my son or autism for my daughter or paralysis for me. Those were worlds I had no clue how to navigate. But in terms of how I got through them, the methodology for that, I think that was instilled at a really young age through my parents. They were always positive people. They always liked to plan. I mean, my dad's mantra was what's planned is possible. And so we were always planning and looking forward. And if we stumbled along the way, we just adjusted and kept moving that direction. So I've had to rely more on that than I ever thought, that adjustment piece, because I've had a lot of plans that aren't possible now. So I think I'm still the same in that that's how I look at life positively. I believe that life can be good no matter what. And as I like to say, I've had a lot of what, it's a process, I think, of finding that good and believing that that good can be. So I think that part's the same.
Wow. Yeah, that's great. And, you know, something I wanted to bring up now, actually, I read your book about 2 years ago, and that's the last time that I had you on with me in my community a couple of years ago. And I was going back and I was reading some of the things that I highlighted from your book. And one of the things that you, this is not a quote, I know, because I've seen it before, that you have in chapter 15, pain is inevitable. A very short but powerful statement that you have here as far as the quote, which is pain is inevitable, but suffering is optional. How in the world were you able to, you know, first let's talk about accept each situation, because it was one thing after another, pain after pain after pain. How were you able to get through that and accept each situation as it came?
Good question. Really good question. I think that for me, honesty was really important, you know, that this hurt, that there was pain, that I didn't try to deny it or make or belittle it or discount it, that, you know, it hurt that Matthew had seizures and I didn't know what to hope for him. But after I admitted that it hurt, the next step that I always tried to do was figure out who could be in the boat with me going through this pain. Who could help me get through it? Who were the experts that either knew technically about the situation or emotionally could support me and help me figure this thing out? Because it was a problem. Each of these were a problem. Life went sideways and I didn't know how to handle it. So to be honest about the pain and get the right people in the boat with you, these were just kind of like my go-to coping when I had to figure out what to accept and what not to accept. And sometimes it's not clear, you know, we have acute pain where there's a death, you know, and we know we've got to accept that. And then we've got kind of chronic pain situations where, you know, there was a chance that Matthew could grow out of his seizures. There was a chance that Madison could grow out of the autism. There was a chance I would be fully restored from paralysis, because 2/3 of the people do. So navigating through that uncertainty, honesty and good people in the boat with you were two things that were my go-tos.
Right. Yeah. And in the book, you mentioned some of your girlfriends and you guys would get together and have a great time together. It's just so important, right? To have good girlfriends.
Absolutely. And, you know, that was one of the things after I had written the book and my friends read it, they, because particularly after my brother Forrest died, he was 17 and I was in college, and they said to me, you know, Becky, we wish we would have been there more. We didn't know what you were going through, because in my book, I was able to open up more about how painful that was. But I told them, just being with them and the structured life that we lived back on campus helped me deal with the pain. You know, it wasn't always front and center in my mind that I lost my brother. You know, it was like, we've got to go to class and we've got to go to the grocery store and we've got to, you know, go out dancing one night. And right. And it's like, it's your girlfriends are so important, because they can really anchor you in tough times. So yes.
Yeah.
Always in the boat with me.
Right. Yeah. I remember reading your book and just getting to that first part. Would you call that the first part? That's the first big part I remember, where Forrest died, your brother.
Right.
I was like, oh my gosh. And then the rest of the book, it was just one thing after another. And I just could not, you can't make it up. You can't make this story up. It's really incredible. The things that you've had to get through, and the fact that you're smiling today, and you have a book tour that you go around and you speak at different places. Do you still do that?
Yes, yes. And one of the coolest things is the number of book clubs that I've been able to go to, because that's really personal and you really get to meet people and understand their life stories. And it's like, everybody's got a story. Mm. You know, everybody. It's like one of the first questions I like to ask is, anyone's here life not gone as planned? Everybody raises their hand like something's not gone right. Mm. So we've all had to adjust to things that we didn't want. Mm-hmm. But I've enjoyed those book clubs. I do those sometimes in person. That's always the challenge, is find an accessible venue. Right. But libraries have been great for that. Oh my goodness. And that's a wonderful resource I just discovered. It's just, they're not your mama's library. They are so different now. Just a resource center.
Yeah.
That's full of opportunities. And so book clubs, and then just some speaking engagements, like, how do you get through this? You know, how do you rethink possible? What's that like? And people have been receptive, and it seems to be helpful. And if all the stuff I've been through can be helpful to someone, like, that's the best, you know? Wow. It's the best if you can help.
Yeah, and that's what I find so amazing about you and what you do, is that so much has been taken away from you in your life. But here you go, different places you travel to inspire others who have probably not been through as much as you've been through, but you acknowledge that everybody's been through something. Everybody has, lived a life that wasn't planned, that didn't go their way and the way that they expected. And it's not easy for you to travel because you are in a wheelchair, like you said. So I want to ask you this, because we women, we have a hard time asking for help a lot of times, right? Now, you're, especially in the beginning, you were in a situation, and still are, where you have to ask for help. And what's that, what has that been like, to have to ask for help to do just the things that, you know, most of us take for granted every day?
Well, you know, it's interesting. It seems to be this era of self-care, you know, self-compassion, self-worth, self-care. And the truth is, asking for help is self-care.
You got it. You are absolutely right. Couldn't have said that better. Yep.
And it's if you need help, there's no weakness in that. And I think for me, you know, that was hard. I was the oldest, the hard charging, you know, get it done. And to ask for help was like, well, I don't need help. I can do that all by myself. Why do I need help? You know, and it's like, that's crazy. But it was one of the hardest things to do, is to realize that I need more help than what I thought I should have. And that's the thing, is that should have. So if you reframe it like this, well, taking care of myself, I need help with that, then it's easier.
Mm-hmm. Right. And you do speak to self-care a little bit in your book, after your dad died.
Yes.
You talked about self-care and, you know, yeah, I mean, we could go into that, but, you know, interesting way to see self-care. Do you want to explain that a little bit or?
Well, you know, when my father was dying and my sister and my mom were with him, and he gathered us around and we thought he was going to say, take care of each other. But he said, take care of yourselves. And I remember shaking my head and thinking, what? And I must say that comment has gotten a lot of reader feedback. They were surprised that that's what Dad's instructions to us were. These were his last instructions, to take care of ourselves and not for us to take care of each other. And then I think after you peel that back a little bit, you realize that when you take care of yourself, then others don't have to take care of you. You know, if you're going to the doctor, if you're eating well, if you're sleeping, if you're, you know, doing all the things, that then you don't get in a situation where somebody has to tend to you. And I've really taken that to heart. It's like, what's the most important thing? And for me is to stay healthy, you know, to keep my body in good shape. And then I try to structure everything around that and keep that in mind, because, you know, one fall for me could be disaster, you know, and then I will be everybody else's problem.
Yeah, right. Exactly. Yeah. Yeah. You're right on. And, you know, the next part that I want to talk with you about is, tell me what, again, I highlighted all these parts, but it's hard for me sometimes to put it in the timeline of what was going on here. So sure. Chapter 17, called Rejected Again and Now Replaced. You said life expectancy will not change my expectations in life. And I just kept reading that over and over and over again. And you said, just what happened first, and I'm going to read this part, but when you said, when I got home, I made a vow to myself, and it was that life expectancy will not change my expectations in life. What did you get home from?
This was, of all things, we had a seminar that was for and presented to the audience of spinal cord injured population. And so it was supposed to be a conference to kind of be encouraging to us. So I went, and they had a speaker that talked about kind of the status of spinal cord injury research. And he told us about some new therapies that were coming about and some regeneration techniques. And then he felt the need to tell us that how we were going to, that renal failure, let's see, what was it? Renal failure was no longer the leading cause of death in the spinal cord injured population. And then he added, of course, life expectancy is less for the spinal cord injured population. And that just floored me, because I'd never really thought of myself as being part of a group, the spinal cord injured population. And now this guy's telling me that I'm not going to live as long because I've joined this group I didn't want to join in the first place. So anyway, it really kind of ticked me off that I was defined by my disability. And I decided that right then, you know, I'm not going to let this define me. I'm going to figure out a way to live fully despite the wheelchair. And I think in that section of the book, I end that chapter with something like, that day I decided to stop trying to wiggle my left toe. And yes, that had been 19 months after paralysis. And like I said before, you know, 2/3 have some kind of recovery, and I had had nothing.
Right.
And I decided that the energy I spent every day trying to move my legs and wiggle my left toe was energy I could spend in another part of my life. And that's when I defined, you know, I'm going to write, I'm going to travel, I'm going to figure out how to live fully in this wheelchair. I think at that time I decided to go ahead and put an elevator in my house. I hadn't been up to my children's rooms. Yeah, they were on the second floor. I was living in the living room. I had made a makeshift bedroom. And so there's a lot of freedom when you let go of a possibility that isn't real anymore. And that wasn't real anymore. And so I redirected that energy toward living fully from the wheelchair. Mm-hmm. Still wish I didn't have to do it, and I'm not happy about it, but you know, you just got to keep moving.
Yeah. Yeah. And realizing that there's still a lot that you can do from the wheelchair. I mean, all of these things that you say here, besides you, the things that you, your expectations for your life still in the wheelchair, like I expect to grow as a parent, nurturing my children, creating an environment for their success has nothing to do with the wheelchair necessarily. I expect to publish my writing. I expect to become as independent as I can be from the wheelchair. I want to vacation, travel, experience as much of life as possible from this contraption I must use. I expect to be ready for recovery, however small it may be. I expect to become involved in at least one major philanthropic effort that would benefit the disabilities of my children or myself. So yeah, a lot of these things have to do with being in the wheelchair, but you know, traveling, being a great parent, publishing, these are all things that you would maybe have wanted to do regardless. I mean, where do you think you'd be now, Becky, if you know, you weren't in the wheelchair?
I never thought I was a writer, that's for sure. But it, when writing became a means for me to connect with people that I didn't see as frequently as I wanted to, and a way for me to kind of absorb my new reality, you know, describe what it's like to be in a wheelchair, to want to see my son play soccer but have to use binoculars because the field was too muddy for my, you know, for my wheelchair to get through. So I think it, I don't know where I would be if I wasn't in the wheelchair. I don't think writing would be it. I think I'd still be in sales. I think I'd still, because my last career before the paralysis was in marketing and sales. So, but you sit still long enough and you have enough, you know, journaling is huge. And I always journaled. Mm. You know, that was, so it made it easier to write the book, but,
right.
But you know, the other thing that happened in terms of expectations is while I was waiting for recovery, and this is something I only realized after I wrote the book and was putting together a couple book talks, is that somebody pointed out to me, you realize that you started Pathfinders for Autism is a nonprofit that I helped start only like 3 months after my paralysis. There was a little yellow flyer came home in Madison's backpack, and they, at that time, 22 years ago, we didn't know that much about autism, and another parent was willing to share a therapy that had helped her son, and that became the beginning of this Pathfinders for Autism nonprofit that now it's been around for 20 years, believe that or not, and now we help like 20,000 people a year. But that was while I was in that indecisive, you know, unclear part of my life, was I going to walk again or not? But I could put energy in my child's disability and her, and try to get help for her through this organizing parents to share information. And it's, I think that's kind of a lesson I've learned too, is that while you're waiting for clarity, do something you have control over. And I could do that. I could find resources for my children. Mm-hmm. And that's turned out to be, and you know, this is Autism Awareness Month, actually.
That's right.
April. So we're celebrating that and celebrating all the ways that we've been able to help others through our own discoveries.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So Rethinking Possible is really about accepting the situation, deciding to live fully in that situation. And what it would be the other piece as far as that?
Well, once you've considered the possibilities, you got to pick one. You've got to pick something and act on it. And I think sometimes that can be overwhelming, you know, if you get too many ideas, but you've got to figure out what you can still do and then do it. There's a little exercise I do called Even Though I Can Still. You know, even though I'm paralyzed, I can still travel. And then I travel. And then you, but you have to do, you know, a whole lot of different plans to make sure that that goes, plans A, B, and C, make sure that happens. But that's a way, I think, to kind of shift into that active gear is, even though I can still, I'd use that quite a bit, especially if I get stuck with, I don't know what to do first.
Right. I like how you said, pick one thing. Pick one thing, because it's almost like having the limitation of the wheelchair, you have to pick one thing. You can't have too many things going on. It can be overwhelming, and it might not be possible to get all of these things going, I guess, or happening. But that's true for any of us, to pick that one thing and to get started on that. Yeah, so I love that. So again, accepting the situation, deciding to live fully in that situation, and then acting on it. So what are you up to now? You're still going around and talking about your book. What else has happened since the book has been published?
Well, I have another grandchild.
Okay.
So that's made life exciting. I think the biggest thing that keeps me moving forward, and that's one of my strategies too, is to always have something to look forward to. You know, what the calendar is a big part of my life, but my Thoughtful Thursdays that I write every week. I had an instructor one time that said, you know, in order to sustain writing, you really have to get down to what it is that you believe and why you write and why you write. And so what I believe is what I mentioned before, that life can be good no matter what. And then what I do on a weekly basis is look for things that remind me of that, that remind me that life can be good no matter what, and what has inspired me that week. And so it really gets me into that positive framework of what's happened in the last 7 days that inspired me or made me think. Sometimes it's not inspiring. Sometimes it's just like stunned by something I'll read. There is another book in the future. I'm working on that. I think the thing that I've discovered in talking about the book is that we all have struggles. We all want to get through struggles. But I've also discovered your valley is your valley, you know. You can't really compare them. But the process to getting through that valley is, I think, very similar, where you have to accept the situation, look at the possibilities, and act on it. No matter if it's a life-changing illness or death or a leaky roof and, you know, you banged up your car, you know, life has gone sideways. How do you get through that? So I'm hoping to write more about that. That seems to resonate with folks, and I want to keep connecting with people. That's very important to me.
Right. And I've been writing a weekly blog as well. And as a, you know, a health coach, you know, it's kind of like we have now, people expect that we continue to write to them and we, So it's almost not an obligation in a bad way, but an obligation in a way that continues to challenge us to look for the good, to look for the positive, to look for the hope. At least that's how I feel. And to constantly be thinking about how we can become better and take care of ourselves and, you know, fill our cups before we go out and, you know, help everybody else before helping ourselves. Because, yeah, just like we talked about in the beginning, if you don't take care of yourself, then other people are going to have to take care of you in the future. And so I see self-care as it's one of the most generous things you can do for the people that you love, is taking care of yourself. And so, Becky, you know, thank you so much. I mean, wow. I mean, you've been through so much and you continue to inspire and gift people with your story. Is it hard to continue to talk about your story?
You know, when I do my book readings, I have to, every time I have to rehearse, because especially the part about losing my brother, and that's just such a deep loss. And sometimes I wonder, is it worth ripping the scab off to experience that again? But it always has been worth it, because it never fails that somebody will come up and they'll tell me one of their stories, and I can see the connection between it. And sometimes I think people need permission to talk about a painful time. They're so busy, you know, stuffing it down or coping with it or compartmentalizing it. So, but it's still there, you know, all of those pains are still there for me. They're just on shelves, different shelves in my mind where I can reach up and honor them, you know, because I think when we hurt deeply, we have loved deeply. And I really try to look at those pains that way. So yeah, it's hard, but it's always worthwhile. It is. I've always been worth the effort to go through it again.
Well, thank you so much, Becky, for coming on and spending some time with us today. I'm going to put your website and your Facebook and your Twitter and your Instagram and your LinkedIn and your Pinterest. You're all over the place. I'm going to put all of that on in the show notes. But for those listening right now, you can go to BeckyGallai.com. That's BeckyGallai.com. You can buy Becky's book, Rethinking Possible, A Memoir of Resilience, on Amazon, Barnes & Noble, Walmart. Also, can they buy it from your website or no?
They have links in there.
Links, okay.
Yep, to those.
Right. And then you can also go to Becky's website to sign up for her Thoughtful Thursdays and get that in your mailbox every Thursday and stay up to date with what's going on in your world. So Becky, anything else before we sign off today?
It's been so great to see you again and talk
to
you.
Yes.
Thank you so much for having me.
Oh, and thank you.
Being a thoughtful reader, I appreciate it.
Absolutely. All right. Until next time, Becky. Thanks so much.
Thank you.
If you find the Me Time Midlife podcast valuable, there are many ways you can support it and support yourself while doing it. You can review it on iTunes, Stitcher, or wherever you happen to listen to it. You can tell your friends about it or share it on social media. And if you want more Me Time in your life, consider becoming a member of the Me Time Midlife community. This is my online community of like-minded and like-hearted women in midlife who want to take charge of their life by cultivating their health, happiness, and purpose while building connections and friendships along the way. There are many benefits to joining, including monthly member-only Q&As with some of the experts you hear on the podcast. Plus, as a listener of the podcast, you get a special listener discount. Go to metimemidlifepodcast.com to learn more. Again, thank you for listening. And until next time, remember, you've been taking care of everyone else. It's your turn to take care of you.